extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Welcome, everybody, to Extra Time, right here on MLS Season Pass, or wherever you listen to your podcast. I'm David Goss. Alongside me, Matt Doyle, Stefano Fusaro. This is, I don't have a letter to go with this squad, but this is like Nations League squad. Like, this is a big thing, but it's not World Cup qualifying. Does that feel good to you guys, or do you guys not feel inspired?
Well, you just compared club soccer to...
When did I compare club?
You said it's Nation... I heard you said Nations League. I heard Leagues Cup. That's on me.
No, that's where you're at now.
That's on me. That's the point.
That's the point.
That's what we've been doing.
Yeah.
We've been working on this for 3 years, right, and it finally worked. Matt Doyle is converted. See, you had to forget yourself to be Leagues Cup.
Or to discover myself, really. It was a summer of discovery, really.
This is V for Vendetta when Natalie Portman finally becomes... I don't really remember the point.
I don't remember that movie at all.
Oh, man. It's a foundational movie for many college students of the right age period at the right time. And all of this. Stefano, how are you?
I'm good. I like the Nation League comparison just because, you know, the Nations League, the USA won that. So, you know, it's good.
I only pick things the US wins.
Like it.
Which is a short list. So mainly Nations League. Some Gold Cups when we get lucky every once in a while. We will, of course, talk national team because we are into an international break. So a number of MLS players are playing around the world, from AFCON qualifying to CONMEBOL World Cup qualifying to Euro qualifying. I don't know what's happening in Asia right now. I apologize.
It's more than 60 players, if I'm correct, right? MLS
is close to 70.
Close to 70 players out.
Which includes youth national teams and full national teams. There are some really interesting youth national team ones as well. So we're going to talk about that. And when we talk about youth national teams, we will also talk about our 22 under 22 list, which the voting is currently happening. That is not a call to arms. You cannot vote. It is voting by experts only.
You can live vicariously through us.
Yeah. AKA you can bombard our social media accounts if you'd like to. The list will come out in the beginning of October, but we're going to talk a bit about our list and who we see being high. So we will talk about that. We're going to help preview the weekend because there are still MLS games this weekend, a good batch on Saturday, and then a Sunday match, LA Galaxy hosting St. Louis. And we have another coaching change, which has been quite a lot this year. Every time there's a coaching change, someone on Twitter, I do not remember their name, I apologize, asks, what is the comparison of MLS versus other leagues around the world in terms of coaching churn? Because it feels very high, and I have never calculated that.
I've not run the numbers. I've seen it in the past. I want to say Paul Carr, a good friend from Opta, did that a few years ago, and MLS managers tend to get a much longer leash than we see elsewhere, specifically our next door neighbors in Mexico. They churn through managers really quickly.
Well, when you've got two playoffs, two seasons, you've got double the amount to fire people based on.
Right. I will say just anecdotally from speaking with guys who've come from Europe or come from South America, come from Mexico to coach in MLS, they all tend to say, you know, after they lose their job eventually, they say, yeah, I want to stay in MLS because you get a chance to build a project here in a way that you don't often see in other leagues. Alessandro Nesta said that a couple years ago.
He never coached in MLS.
He coached in USL. He played in MLS, coached in USL. And for those of you who are too young to know, Alessandro Nesta is probably the best center back I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
Played in MLS at the tail end of his career with Montreal.
Except for Breck Shea and Andrew Wing.
Except for Breck
obviously, Shea and Andrew Wing.
And then coached the Miami USL side for a few years and then got a job in Serie B. I forget what his first one was. It Frosinone? I'm not sure if that's the right pronunciation. But he ended up having two different jobs in Serie B. They played good ball. Didn't get promoted. He got fired both times. And this was in like mid-2021. He gave an interview where he's like, yeah, I want to imagine MLS, man, because like you get a chance to actually build a project over the course of a few years. You're not necessarily living and dying on every single result. Related news, he's back managing in Italy. I believe in Serie A now. I forget what
he's with. Reggina.
Okay.
Who are in?
I think they're Serie B.
Serie B. So he's probably trying to go
Perugia,
up again.
Perugia, and then went to Frosinone. Yeah.
He is with Frosinone. You had it right. Okay. With the pronunciation. They're up in Serie A now.
Okay.
But yeah, he's in Serie B. I remember him coaching. I remember I went to a couple of games when he was coaching Miami FC.
And that team was loaded.
But they were loaded. Yeah. They were. I remember because obviously with Inter Miami being actually in Fort Lauderdale up in Broward County, their big social media, I guess, initiative was like the only team actually in Miami down here. This is after Inter Miami arrived, obviously. But yeah, I remember seeing it was pretty wild to see Alessandro Nesta coaching at a FIU stadium with Miami FC. It was pretty cool to see. But yeah,
he's big on slot receivers. He likes to run an offense with a lot of slot receivers. Yeah. If you had not heard this before, this is normally when a coaching vacancy opens where Doyle starts with Nesta. It's like one of the first names he says every time we have this conversation.
I gotta admit, I don't even know if he's a good manager or not. I just loved him so much as a player. Like, I just want him. I want him in MLS.
It would be awesome to have him in MLS. Yeah. Let's be real.
So he could potentially become the next head coach of the Colorado Rapids.
There we go. That's a very good segue.
Which is not where I'm going right now.
Okay.
But first, we're going to do the best things we saw this
really
weekend.
Really bad segue. Though.
Exactly. And then we're going to get to the Rapids. Robin Fraser has parted ways with the Colorado Rapids. We'll talk about his future. We'll talk about the club, 2022, as I said, national team preview and all of that. But let's start with this weekend. And we are going to start with Stefano here, who already brought up Miami, shockingly.
Shocking.
Let's continue on our way. Yeah, what's the best thing you saw?
And we'll keep going that way. Again, shocking. Inter Miami beating LAFC. I think that everybody who is somebody involved in Major League Soccer, whether it's here on the show, whether it's in front offices, wherever it may be, was picking LAFC to win this game and was, you know, probably smartly calling this the biggest challenge that Inter Miami has had this season and will have this season. And once again, they passed the test with flying colors. They survived for the first few minutes. Danny Buonga, you know, not as clinical, which is maybe a little bit for a fortune for Inter Miami there.
Had one of those Kevin Cabral games.
Yeah,
one of
them. Exactly. But it just wasn't there for them. And Inter Miami comes out. They look, you know what I thought was most interesting is that they looked composed. They looked calm. Obviously, a lot of that has to do with Messi being on the team and him being able to push the team forward. Facundo Farias scores a fortunate goal to get them going. But I think that once they were up 1-0, you started seeing a little panic from LAFC, and you never saw that from Inter Miami, even when they were being, you know, the first 10, 15 minutes. They were fortunate not to concede at least two goals. Trey Callender, again, an incredible performance. Yeah. You know, kind of validating the fact that he is now with the U.S. national team for this camp. But, you know, I think it just has to be said. Everyone believed that Inter Miami was going to lose this game, that this was going to be, you know, if they get a loss in this one, you can start to say, okay, they're probably not going to make the playoffs. They get 3 points in L.A. against the champs, and we just keep this train rolling moving forward. I thought it was impressive.
This, the Philly game and the Cincy game, I think, are the three that they went into as kind of like prohibitive underdogs. Yep. And combined, they scored 10 goals over those three games, allowed five. One to Philly, one to LAFC.
And two to Cincinnati.
And two to Cincinnati.
So four.
I thought it was three. Wasn't it 3-3 in Cincinnati?
Oh, maybe.
Yeah.
No. Oh, yeah, it was 3-3.
Yep. 3-3, yeah.
Maria says yes.
Yes. I mean, yeah, I thought they were going to lose.
Yeah, I mean,
I thought they were going to go in on short rest. They hadn't played great at Nashville. Nashville have kind of laid a blueprint for teams that don't necessarily want to have the ball. And our good friend Michele Giannone pointed out on his Twitter feed that is definitely LAFC these days. Like, they have completely lost their midfield identity. It is all sit, absorb, and counter. And I thought that's what LAFC were going to do. But they just couldn't do it. They just couldn't do it. And like you said, it was fortunate, the first goal. Mm-hmm. I thought it was really clever.
It was
a great run. I thought it was a clever finish. I think he kind of knew that McCarthy wasn't going to have his feet set at that point. And Aaron Long, I think, read it a little. He was a little bit slow, a little bit behind the play. So that and Callender being what he is. Like, yeah, you could read this as Miami getting the breaks and being a little fortunate, but it was also like, if you have really good players, and Miami are pretty clearly at this point, I think, the deepest team in the league, then you tend to get more breaks than everyone you're coming up against.
Yeah, there's a little bit of like a checklist of what a team's going to have to do to beat this team and what the teams will look like that will do it. And you just named, I think, the three top teams that you'd say, which are like, if you're direct, especially down the middle, you're going to create chances. Cincinnati got the closest because they actually had the lead and they sort of dropped off. But there's no room for error and there's no margin for it. And I think that was what we saw with LAFC, was like Bouanga had to put one of those chances away. You had to play from a lead.
Right.
If you created those chances early on, you had to play from a lead. And then you have some weaknesses in your team, one being John McCarthy. McCarthy is, I don't believe, a starting level MLS goalkeeper. It was cool what he did in MLS Cup last year. I think not going out and finding someone to fill in for Crépeau for this portion of the season may have lost them a CCL trophy. It may have lost them a chance at Supporters Shield this year. I don't think they'll...
Are we going to do the Anders thing then?
Care about that as much? Is he an MVP?
No. We're going to do the Anders thing where it's like, okay, LAFC do not play well in big games.
Well, they won MLS Cup.
They did. That was, and if you look at every other big game in the club's history, they've kind of underperformed, right? Including and especially CCL final against Club Leon. It's not just that they lost, but they're the first MLS team to make it to the final and lose both legs. It's that they looked scared in that second leg at home, right? And they had gotten a decent enough result at Leon, 2-1 at Leon. That's fine. Like, you come back with that, and you were, I think they were the favorites heading into that final. They didn't. So anyway, that was just to your point. Like, I don't think McCarthy cost them the, like, that trophy. I think that this team, like, there's a growing body of evidence that they're just not great in big moments. And that look, they weren't great in MLS Cup. It took a miracle goal from Gareth Bale to tie the game in the 128th
minute. But you can do that with most teams that win trophies at some point in that game, right?
Fair.
But I think, so here's the interesting thing, though, with that is there isn't a ton of consistency across all of those games outside of Vela.
Yeah.
Like, you've changed coaches,
right,
and you've flipped that roster 15 times mid-season over the course of the last few years. So and now you've changed their style. So it's interesting to think about where that comes from. I do think you saw this game, one of the issues of the change of style, which is like they can't dictate games. So you have Miami, who when they're on the ball are going to create chances guaranteed. And then you have a team, now you're chasing them, but you don't really look comfortable with the ball because you don't normally play that way. And so Bouanga left it on the table. He was a Golden Boot candidate to start the year. If he doesn't play that way, then it didn't feel like they had a chance. And Selena Gomez agreed.
Yeah, Selena Gomez was definitely agreeing, which is crazy, right? Because we're talking about McCarthy, and she's actually reacting to a save by McCarthy over Leo
Selena
Messi.
Gomez, huge John McCarthy fan.
Apparently.
Back in 2015, during the U.S. Open Cup run, she was saying that you had to let him start the whole U.S. Open Cup run. That was Selena Gomez always been on record.
I mean, come on, we knew that.
Yeah.
My favorite was Pulisic after... kind of sub, I guess not subtweeting, but on Instagram saying, hey, tell her she can come to the USA, the U.S. men's national team games as well. No, look, I think with LAFC, I don't think it's one, you know, we could say McCarthy, he hasn't been up to the level. You know, that Farias goal probably should have been stopped. But I think it's a combination of that, a combination of this, their midfield is just not able, like you said, they're not able to control the game in that midfield like they did last season. In the playoff run, but also in the regular season, you're just not seeing that same control. They can't keep the ball. They can't, dictate the pace of the game. They did it early in this match against Inter Miami, where they were on the front foot, but it was mostly their attacking players that were just keeping the pressure on, pressing Miami hard. And once they were, you know, once they got past those first 20 minutes and they're not able to continue that press, the midfield wasn't able to control the game, and that's where Miami had their opportunities. Yeah, they scored a couple of their goals were obviously on, you know, on their own version of counterattacks. Mm-hmm. But still, the fact that LA can't control a game in the midfield, I think, is really where it goes to see where their issues are and why they're not having the same type of success they did last year. And like you said, in those big games, what really dictates a game is the midfield, especially in a tight matchup like they did have against Inter Miami.
The same thing happened in League's Cup.
Right.
You know, like they took that 2-0 lead. And at that point, like, okay, you can absorb, that's fine, but you have to use the ball against Monterrey to slow them down, to make the game happen where you want it to happen. You have the lead, you have that padding. They were singularly they could not do that in that League's Cup loss. And it kind of just played out in similar fashion in this one. They didn't have the lead, obviously, but like once Miami weathered that first 15-20 minute storm, the game took place where Miami wanted it to take place.
Yeah, absolutely. And for Miami, we said it. I think the biggest test, they played midweek. They travel cross country. You have a lot of players who have international window coming up that they're sort of looking at and thinking about. You came through all of that, the pressure, the intensity at the reigning champion's house. You get a 3-1 win. Does anyone feel any differently about Miami out of this one? We'll talk about this weekend coming up. They'll be missing 10 players for international. Does anyone feel anything different? You guys are all the same?
Go ahead.
I mean, I just think that I don't think any different. I think that they were going into that game. I would not have been shocked if they lose against LAFC coming off the short rest. And what they ended up doing is just taking all those concerns and saying, no, it's still the same team that we don't. I'm not saying that people are doubting them, but it's still the same team where people can't believe that they're going to have this much success this quickly. And no, it's still that team. It's still the team where, yeah, they're outperforming even what they should, even with their talent and their depth. You still think, okay, well, they're going to have a hiccup here and there. And, you know, I guess you can look to the Nashville draw as a, quote, hiccup.
Yeah.
But it's not really. And they go into LAFC and they get it done. So, no, I don't think that anything's changed. I think it's still the same team that's shocking us, but in a way where we thought, yeah, this is possible.
And I think last week, if you said they get 4 points, they beat Nashville, they draw at LAFC, you're fine.
They would have rather reversed that.
Yeah, right.
But it is what it is.
It's 4 points. Yeah. And, like, I'm like 30% more confident now that they're actually going to do it, that they're actually going to make the play.
This weekend will be a large step towards that because it will be, of course, without Messi, without Drake Callender and many other pieces. It is still 3 points that they need because of the way they're set up.
And they're playing a desperate Sporting Kansas City team that also need 3 points and that will have most of their best players.
They're going from, we talked about LAFC being their biggest challenge, their biggest test. They're going from their biggest test of the season to their biggest test of the season, having to do all that, again, like you said, against the hot, desperate SKC side and without probably 10 guys, which is kind of insane to be able to recover from that.
And it'll be like what? Like 114 degrees and humid?
Easy.
For that game back at home.
Oh, yeah.
This was fun. Star-studded in LA. I think this had one of those special moments that we get every once in a while of like this game sort of stands out. In a regular season.
Star-studded in D.C. as well.
Was it?
Oh, yeah. Because Ted Cudipietro.
Come on.
Transition man.
Was in the starting lineup. This was interesting to me because Wayne Rooney, early in the year, he made two changes. Change one, number one was their game model. They were going to play super direct. They have sort of leaned into that constantly throughout the year. Christian Benteke is challenging for and winning more aerials than any player in our Opta database in the history of our Opta database, which goes back to 2010. It's by a mile. So he has held up his end of the bargain. The other change is like in doing that, Wayne Rooney went from a 4-3-3 is what they were playing at the start of the year to 3-4-2-1 just to get more defenders out there, make them more dangerous on set pieces and all that. It had not been working recently. They get to the final third. They don't create chances out of it. They certainly don't score goals out of it. Benteke, as much as he's held up his end of the bargain in terms of being that fulcrum, that target, he had not scored in 3 months. Wayne Rooney makes a change this weekend, 4-2-3-1 at home in the biggest game of the weekend, all due respect to Miami versus LAFC, 4-2-3-1, dropping the center.
That is a take.
It was.
I mean, for playoff
picture. For playoff position.
Ninth, first, tenth, you're right.
Like dropping a center back to bring on another attacker. And the attacker he brought on was Ted Cudipietro, a DC United Academy kid who people sort of first David knew him long before this, but people first discovered about 4 or 5 years ago in GA Cup, DC were playing some Korean team, and Kirby DiPietro absolutely buried some poor defender. He looked like Messi versus Boateng, turning him one way, turning him the other way, and then putting the guy in a grave before banging home a finish to the far post. And like, that is still the player that Kirby DiPietro is. In terms of dribbles per 90, he's like first or second in the league. He always wants to go at you. He can combine around the box well, but he's not a visionary passer, to break your, or to borrow your analysis of Gadi Kinda, he doesn't break lines, right? So he's not really a 10. He doesn't have the speed to be a true winger. Can you put him as sort of a 9.5 underneath Christian Benteke? The answer is yes. The answer was like a resounding yes. These two guys have like instant and like prolific chemistry. And granted, this was only against the Chicago Fire, who are in a tailspin at this point. But Benteke was wonderful. He was not stranded at all this game because Kirby DiPietro is always trying to make a direct run off his shoulder into space. Like, maybe don't even call it a 4-2-3-1. Maybe you call it an old-fashioned 4-4-2 English style where you have the one big forward and the one small forward. Right. Like, and Kirby DiPietro, he's held up his end of the bargain. He's got 5 goals now in like 750 minutes. I think he's a starter. And this, we could segue to our 22-under-22 discussion, but like, I think he's a starter for the rest of the year, based upon what he has produced this year, based upon the fact that DC tend to play better when he's out there, and especially because Christian Benteke all year long has been asked to make everyone else better, and he has done it. And they have not put a single player on the field for most of the year who makes Benteke better. And I think Kirby DiPietro does that. And I really enjoyed seeing that this weekend.
Awesome.
I think you saw that from Benteke, because for so long he was just the forward. He was at the top of that formation, getting balls, long balls up, heading them down, getting the wingers coming forward. But I think you saw that with Kirby DiPietro, how much it frees him, because now they have to worry. You have to worry about Kirby DiPietro.
You got to track
obviously
that run.
And you saw it in this game. Granted, we could say that Chicago is really having a hard time, but Benteke had a couple of plays. I mean, the goal that he scores, that's not your typical Benteke goal where he shakes a defender, cuts to his left, and that's not what you see. And I feel like that having Kirby DiPietro on the field gives them that threat where it's like, okay, they're combining very well, and it gives that a little bit of opportunity where Benteke can have a play like that and show that, oh, he still has that skill, and maybe give him that confidence to do that. I mean, it wasn't their typical Benteke, but the assist he has, the same thing. Where, I mean, it's just really interesting to see how much it's freeing up Benteke to do a little bit more than I think we've seen from Benteke, not just in this league, but probably in the last 4 or 5 years, going back to when he was in Europe.
Well, I go back to the Miami conversation we just had, which is like, Benteke different than Messi. But like, if you have a high level star, you need to make sure that they like playing with you and that you're worth being there for them. And I think one of the things Kramaski's had is like, he's always making a run for Messi so that Messi has that option if he wants it, which they appreciate. It makes their life easier. And that's what you see with Kirby DiPietro, which is he's a dribbler, but the thing that's like always been on the first list when coaches talk about him is that he runs all day.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like, if you're going to be a young player and you want to get on a field, be the hardest working player.
Yeah.
So that at a minimum, people can guarantee you're going to affect the game and show up. Then you talk about quality and how you like what you actually do, but run all game.
Yeah.
And Kirby DiPietro does that. And so like, I think that got him on the field for Rooney in the beginning, was like, this kid works hard. I'll give him a shot. And then if he continues to perform, this is a club we've talked about with youth development for 10 years now of like, they've been a mess. They've had good moments and bad moments. The good moments don't feel purposeful.
Yeah.
They feel like regional or lucky or forced on them. And the bad moments felt fairly purposeful. I don't know that everything is fixed, but Rooney has given a lot of young players chances. And it feels like if they're going to make the playoffs, some of them are going to be a factor. And your hope is that then
Chris Durkin had an assist for the, in like, I think Rooney doesn't still, like, he still doesn't know exactly what position Chris Durkin should play.
Inverted right wing back slash defensive mid second eight.
I mean, maybe the John Stones role is somewhere in the future, right? Where is a ball playing center back who steps into midfield? Like, I could see that.
You mean Andrew Privet?
Right. Wow. Andrew Privet is legitimately playing the John Stones role for Charlotte FC. It's fun. It's fun to watch. I feel about DC almost the way I feel about Nesta. Like, Nesta was so formative for me in terms of like what a great center back looks like. And like, DC United was the first great MLS team, and it feels right to me to see them perform well. And especially because, as you said, they've had a lot of young players come through. Well, part of that is like, that is one of the great hotbeds of talent in North America, right? It's probably, you would put Southern California and New York area maybe slightly ahead of it, but only slightly. There's a ton of kids who come out of Maryland, Northern Virginia, and that's DC's hotbed. Like, that's their recruiting ground.
Every academy in MLS has a kid from the DMV.
Yeah,
right.
Like, that's how good it is, unfortunately.
They can't DC all be doesn't DC always, United, right?
Yeah, well, some of them should be,
right?
And that's DC's fault.
Yep.
And that's where we're at. I think Rooney's a big part of fixing that. They've adjusted the academy a lot as well. We'll get into the 22 under 22. They don't have as many names on that list as they should, but...
I'm going to offer a mea culpa. A couple of months ago, when I returned from my sabbatical, the first column I wrote was like, okay, middle of the season, let's take a look at who the best 22 under 22 guys are this year and who could, you know, crack the list. And I made the list 34 names long. I did not include Tedku DiPietro. That is a miss on my part. I just filed my 2020, my official ballot for 22 under 22. I had him on the list.
I'm taking that one up to the final second that I can. I'm moving names around on that one. But shout out to Teddy. New clip, because apparently the clip of Bobby Warshaw dying after that goal, his friends watch and then make fun of him for. So we could throw, let's clip out Doyle doing, you know, complimenting him, apologizing to him, and we can send that to his friends as well. Let's finish up with the best thing I saw this weekend, which was the Vancouver Whitecaps winning the Cascadia Cup for the first time since 2016 without even playing in it, because Seattle gave up a 2-goal lead to the Portland Timbers because Leo Chu.
Man.
Listen, man, I get it. Sometimes the shirt's got to come. Sometimes you got to pop that baby off. And he got a first yellow card for that, picked up a second yellow. Then Miles Joseph? Yeah, not Miles Robinson. Miles Robinson plays center back for Atlanta. Miles Joseph coaches the Portland Timbers. Brought on Dairon Asprilla, who scored on his first touch. Didn't take the shirt off. Just pulled it back. Smart. To expose the t-shirt that he wanted to show. And then Evander with a pretty special goal like 2 minutes after that to make it 2-2. So the Vancouver Whitecaps, their first Cascadia title in 7 years. And while slightly tongue-in-cheek to mock Portland and Seattle here, I think this shows the build for Vancouver over these 7 years of, like, we're talking back to Mark Dos Santos years, and they've had a lot of stop-start moments. They've had some moments where it felt like they had a clear identity or an idea. Then they'd go out and lean maybe too far into it, like Ali Ahmed as a designated player, or have players like Maxime Crépeau who didn't want to be a part of the project because didn't really see a future. And then I think now you've finally found a spot under Sartini where they've gotten 3 straight results on the road. It feels like they're going to make the playoffs. They've won 2 Canadian championships. They are the most stable club in Canada. They've helped produce Alfonso Davies and a number of the World Cup players that played in the Men's World Cup last winter that will probably be a part of Canada hosting a World Cup in a couple of years. There are a lot of things going right for Vancouver. I think they get credit for sort of understanding who they were and then trying to maximize within this. And I don't think this is just a right now thing. Like, Kubas is there for a while. Mm-hmm. He's special. Gold is at the right age. Yep. He's already moved around a ton. He might want to stay.
Gold and White together. Talk about players who just, like, make each other better.
Yeah.
Brian Gold loves a Brian White run. Like, come on. I'm just going to ping blind balls to the far post.
And by the way, another team that finally settled into a 3-5-2. Because Gold is a forward now, right? And yeah, Gold is, like, the perfect example of that playmaker who's at his best when he's just an attacker. You do not want him orchestrating. You do not want him, you know, moving the pieces around on the chessboard. They have other guys in the midfield who do that well. I'm still bullish on Pedro Vite, the young Ecuadorian. You know, Schupp has been, like, he's a Bundesliga player, and he looks like a Bundesliga player these days, finally. And as you said, Kubas is special.
And they've, you know, they hit Veselinovic out of the park
early.
Yep. That he was a 2022 guy when he came to this league. Yep. They've got him on a long-term contract. I don't know that Tristan Blackman's worked out perfectly, but
I think he's been really good.
He falls asleep in moments where, but you need three center backs in that system. There are not a ton of great center backs in MLS. And I think they hit it on the head in the goalkeeper addition this year to fix sort of what they left open last year. So congratulations to them. Canadian champions, Cascadia Cup. They made it through the group stage.
They're making the
of
playoffs.
Leagues Cup. They are making the playoffs.
They're on 38. Well, God, it's not done yet. They're on 38 points through 26 games. So they have a game in hand on most of the teams chasing them. And on the two teams directly in front of them, which are Houston and Salt Lake. They are three games into that seven-game season-defining trip. I think if they get one more win, right?
Mm-hmm. And I'll just throw in two of those trips are to Toronto and Colorado.
Okay, yeah. That's
one is to Houston, one is to RSL. Those are the four games left.
I mean, they would love to get 3 points at either Houston, or even getting a point out of either of those games would be huge for them. And then you get a win in either Toronto or Colorado.
Or both.
Or both.
I mean, that's legitimate. Yeah. That could be.
With the way they've played.
Right.
And the way they've handled big moments, especially like a Toronto matchup, which is Vancouver knows who they are. They're direct.
Yeah.
They hurt you if you give them openings. Toronto's a mess.
Yeah.
They finish with LAFC on decision day, which I think is going to be fitting because they've sort of been a sacrificial lamb for LAFC in big games of like, oh, Vela needs to break the record. He's going to put up three against Vancouver. Oh, it's decision day. Yeah, we'll give them Vancouver at home and LAFC will run out 6-2 winners. I think that's going to be a fitting turnaround. They still play at Seattle, but they've already clinched Cascadia Cup. So congratulations to the Vancouver Whitecaps. Let's touch on some other big games from this weekend. I think the biggest one, Kansas City, 2-1 winners over St. Louis. We had a good performance from Kansas City and a tough one from St. Louis. Which one do you guys want to go to first?
We should go to Kansas City.
All right, let's go positive first. I think there's a lot of positive of what they did in this game. I thought Rosero was really good at center back and helping them be more stable. But I think we have to start with Pulido.
Yeah, Pulido, when he plays this year, Sporting are up around 1.6, 1.7 points per game. He's got 12 goals in, I think, 20 starts. So he's two off the golden boot race. And if you look at the guys who have double-digit goals, I think he's got the best goals per 90. He runs a ton. And you don't think of it like that. You think of Pulido as a forward who sort of drifts and controls possession and does not, but he has really spearheaded that press. There's a reason they're a better defensive team with him in there because he's very smart about how he presses. And then what he does that very few forwards in MLS do, he drops in and he's more of a false nine than he is a traditional number nine by, I think, most measures. So he drops in and he makes that midfield three a four, gives you more ball security in central midfield. Means fewer counterattacks. For a team that wants to have the ball and has center backs, really an entire back line that's been kind of in flux for 4 or 5 years, though I agree with you, Rosero has been very good.
He's been the best they've gone out and signed a random center back to hope it works.
In a decade.
Yeah.
In a decade. But Pulido makes them better on both sides of the ball in the obvious way, which is with his pressing. He makes it harder to build out against them. And then in the less obvious way, which is with his possession, he causes them to turn over the ball less often. And when they do turn it over, it's in better spots for them to counter press and win it back. And they didn't have any of that against St. Louis the first time these two teams met. And they got their asses kicked 4-0. Like, they basically did not come out of the locker room in that one. So to turn it around, get punched in the face by a great goal by Adeniran. But still bounce back and through there. Like, look, I had Alan Pulido fourth in my MVP ballot, which, you know, we just sent in to the guys in who run editorial. I think he's been that good, and he has been that important for this team. And it was nice to see this game feel like a rivalry, and Sporting get some of their own back after what happened in May.
It's a complete, the drop off when Pulido's not there is insane. I mean, we talked about it, just how the numbers say, but just, you don't need the numbers. You just visually watching this team. I think it's also perfect when you have Pulido in that false nine role. I don't think that they're, especially now with a little bit of time where they've played with him, but to have Shallowy and Russell as the wingers when he drops in, it's almost like a perfect storm for Sporting Kansas City when they're playing up to the par, when they're playing at this level. When you take Pulido out, now you're forced to have Shallowy come a little more central, to have Johnny Russell try to do more inside, which, look, they could do it, but this is the way that they should play, that they want to play, and you see why when they were on this pitch. It's a completely different team than we saw earlier in the season. I mean, it's night and day, like you mentioned. It was a 4-0 absolute thrashing earlier in the season. When you have Pulido playing this way, and you have Shallowy and Russell being able to do it, Eric Tommy, who's also been great in the midfield, just especially when Pulido does drop and Tommy can get involved with him and they can combine moving forward, this is a team that, like we've seen, I always see this in MLS where it's just the wild swings that we have on one team can have in one season, whether there's new players in or not. This is a perfect example of that. This team with Pulido playing this way, I don't think anybody wants to see SKC in the playoffs if they make it there. And if they're there, I don't think anybody's going to want to see a Pulido that's playing like this and a team that's playing so well around him.
The one asterisk to all that is if they make the playoffs, it's not going to be as a team that ends up having many home games.
Yeah. Right.
They are 1-6-6 away from home so far this year. They go to Miami this weekend.
I will say on the Pulido stuff, it's interesting that Shallowy likes a shot from a bad angle. And on the first goal, he put his head down with the entire intent of putting that ball across. Like, he was like, if I can get towards the end line, I can pull this across. Pulido's going to make this run. Shallowy shoots that from that angle the first 4 months of this season, all of last year, and probably half of the year before. And I think that's that effect that you see. Shout out to my man, Jake Davis. He is crushing it at right back.
I legit considered putting him on my 22.
He's in my conversation on the back end of, like, if he's...
He looks like a 10-year MLS starter.
Me and Anders had the debate. He goes, who is he? I said, Daniel Lovitz.
Yeah.
But on the right side. Like, Zusi's probably too high.
Correct.
Of a mark. Names like, you know, Sean Franklin, sort of, I thought about. Yep. Of like, if he's on your team, you're better.
Yeah.
He's not the reason you win, but winning teams will have him on the
roster.
And
he won't be the reason you lose.
Yes. Right. And maybe he'll be more. I mean, he was a center mid 6 months ago, which is the funny part about it. So he sets that up. I thought, after St. Louis's goal, that SKC turned up intensity. I thought 50-50s turned to 60-40s.
Yep.
And I was surprised that St. Louis struggled to match that. One, because of their game model of, like, that's how you play. And now I go back over the last 2 months and say, in, like, fake knockout playoff versions of, like, what will it look like in the playoffs? Leagues Cup and against your biggest rival, they have been knocked back. Like, they have played on their heels. They have not been able to do what they want to do. But I thought the intensity level was the biggest thing that stood out to me of, like, okay, this is what St. Louis needs to prove to me the rest of the year, is that in the playoffs, they can raise their game. Because I don't think the playoff model, now we've seen over a few years, favors their style of, like, teams that high press that don't create chances out of a ton of possession. They have struggled. Even with Philly's success, it's taken Philly 19 times to barely get over the line, and they still haven't gotten over the line. I thought that was concerning from St. Louis in this game.
Without a doubt. St. Louis is a team where, I mean, it's been a great story, and they're still first in the West, and they're going to be good, but you're really starting to see some of those cracks, in my opinion, just in the last few games.
Look, we have to say Lovin rotated out.
Lovin rotated out. Klaus didn't
still
start.
Back. Joe Keeney on the bench.
Yeah, he was on the bench. You expect all those guys to be in moving forward. I quite don't know what to make of this team. Like you said, I don't think that they're set up for a playoff run. I really need to just see more, I guess, at this point from this team to really kind of get a a true read on what they're going to be, but this game didn't show that. Like you said, they didn't. It was weird to see a Bradley Carnell side and the way that they've played all year.
It looked like they
kind of turned it off.
They looked like they were looking at the ref a ton in midway through the first half when Casey turned it on of like, where's the calls? And it's like, you don't want the calls.
Right.
Like, that's your game model. That's what you guys are doing. And it was, that was bizarre to me. And then that sort of gets into the like, yeah, this SKC team has struggled, but a lot of these guys have been there.
Right.
And it felt like they had a gear to go to. They do play one more time, which is fun because now it's a pure rubber match. That's in St. Louis. St. Louis has obviously the favorites to win this thing, but this is what you wanted, I think, from year one.
Yeah. It's a no matter what happens from here on out for St. Louis, it's a successful year.
I meant of the rivalry.
The rivalry going into the final meeting of the year with like something on the line for both teams in terms of the rivalry itself and in terms of playoff implications. One point I wanted to make to you guys as you were talking about St. Louis dropping off, everybody remembers the 5-0 start, the perfect start. If it wasn't for what Messi did in the Leagues Cup, we would be like, this was the most magical thing that happened in MLS this year.
The whole time we said, we'll never see a run like this in MLS again.
They are 9-13-2. That's win, loss, draw. 9-13-2 in all competitions since that start. And I think that's a pretty good indicator of what they are. A fun, explosive, imperfect team that could nonetheless beat Cincinnati 4-0 on the day, but then turn around and be utterly helpless if they don't get a couple of breaks against just about anyone.
Speaking of Cincinnati, we apologize to FC Cincinnati. We spent 35 minutes last week about how they could break the points record. Then they went out and lost the next game to Orlando City. So we're going to take an L on that one as a group and as a show. That will put us at 0-1-0 to start out this season. Obviously, Cincinnati still driver's seat for Supporters Shield. That was not the type of result, though, that gets you to a points record. Congrats to Orlando. That's a big win. It's been up and down for Orlando. That's been the story all year. It feels like it's been more up now over the last few weeks, and I think that should be exciting for Orlando fans. They're third right now in the East.
It's insane. I feel like Orlando's, since the restart, they've been one of the more interesting teams to watch. And not just, when I say interesting, not always the most fun team to watch, but they are. I think they've played to their strengths. They're looking real good. Facundo Torres is showing to be the real deal. He's been incredible for them the last couple of weeks. I like this Orlando team. I'm a big Pareja guy. Oscar Pareja, I think, is probably a top 2-3 coach in this league, in my opinion. And I see him, Orlando, doing this and moving forward with this team. I think that they're another team that no one really wants to see them right now as far as how they're playing organized soccer. And that's without your guy. That's without McGuire really doing much. If I'm correct, he hasn't done much in the last three games, right?
It's been like four games.
Now. But to beat Cincinnati at home, something no one has done this season at all, that's a statement win. And I think that they're going to get that motivation kind of moving forward.
They love like the underdog, everything against them thing. They sold Erkan Kara.
Yep.
Over the weekend, which I forgot to put in the rundown because I forgot about it until you brought up Duncan McGuire just now, which I think on one hand, credit to them for like...
They sold him and then Duncan McGuire instantly gets hurt. Yeah. And so now suddenly, well, I was going to say they're thin at forward, but they also have Ramiro Enrique who came on and assisted on the lone goal. But they also have Jack Lynn.
MLS Next Pro Golden Boot. Tied first place.
He's been tearing up MLS Next Pro, so he might be useful down the stretch. Anyway, I stepped on your point.
No, I was just going to say, I think a slightly credit to like recognize with Carr, it didn't work out.
Yep.
Flip it on, but...
There were about a dozen MLS teams, by the way, who I think could have used Erkan Carr.
Oh, yeah. I was shocked to see him leave the league like that. I really expected another MLS team to come in for him.
Yeah.
They could use... I mean, you could name a few teams that could use a guy
like him. It felt like, though, for Orlando, it was like...
He'd be the best forward the Red Bulls have had since Bradley Ray Phillips by a mile.
Hands down.
You talk about the Red Bulls spending money at center forward.
Yeah, but also, Erkan Kara doesn't press at all, so that would be
eliminated real quick.
Yeah.
But it's just, I think, interesting for Orlando to choose to make this decision right now. Because the window's closed. They can't replace him. Duncan McGuire's clearly the guy. There's trust, I think, over the course of the roster. And then it's, we got it wrong. let's just get the resources back so we can go out and do something else in the future, which isn't exactly a win now move, which I think is good. One thing being Oscar Pereja and Luis Muzy are not on contracts after this year,
which is wild,
which is kind of one of the questions of like, would you do? That's a forward thinking move to make of Carr is not a game changer for you right now, but if you're not going to be the one at the club, it doesn't matter what the resources you get back for him. I just thought it was an interesting move to come down this week.
I thought it was as well. I don't hate it though, because, you know, big Duncan McGuire guy. So I like to see any domestic kids, whether they're coming through homegrown or the draft, I like to see them win a job outright. And he won a job outright against an Austrian full international, which is like, that's pretty legit right there. And for what it's worth, the injury did not look, it looked like a shoulder injury. It didn't look like the type of thing that would keep him out for a prolonged period of time. And let's hope that's not the case. And just overall, Oscar Pereja has accomplished so much in this league that I still think about that 2016 Dallas team. Yeah. They win the treble if Mauro Diaz doesn't pop his Achilles on, I think it was on decision day. Like that team was so good, and he built that team. He's one of the guys who kind of built a South American pipeline. He's also probably the first guy who showed what building through the academy can do. Like certainly if you look at what Dallas, that academy, a lot of it had to do with Oscar Pereja. If Orlando go in a different direction this offseason, not remember what you were before Oscar Pereja? We all do. I'll tell you about it, for one. And for two, you talk about a man who is not going to be out of a job for long.
No.
Oh, no. And it, not just MLS. I mean, from anywhere in the world.
Yeah, we'll coached in Liga MX, obviously, right. Colombian international.
But it does go back to, like, Oscar Pereja likes a project, yeah. Right? He's not a quick fix artist. He makes a lot more sense in MLS than he would in, well, we saw what happened in Tijuana.
If Oscar Pereja leaves MLS, the pipeline of college soccer center forwards to whatever country that opens up is going to be, like, anyone who works in Colombia, if you want to know about the CAA and the MAC and the Mountain West Conference, I got you. Hit me up. Pereja's
got your guy. Is your guy. Wait, real quick, before we go, what are your thoughts on Facundo Torres, Doyle? Just, I love what he does, but...
I'm still not the biggest... I he's not an Almada level. I like Santi Rodriguez better than him.
Underlying numbers are creeping up into that top eight convo of... tens,
yeah,
but which was not early in the
but can we really call him a true 10?
He's not. He's an inverted winger,
right?
He's a guy you want playing off of the true playmaker, and who is a second he's a secondary creator, and he's a secondary goal scorer. And maybe I'm being unfair in not liking him as much as I should. I'm like, he like,
be Reynoso or don't show up is what Doyle's saying.
Pretty much that.
And if you're not, go home.
Yeah.
Let's talk about one of Oscar Pereja's former jobs in Colorado. Robin Fraser out as head coach. He was hired back in August of 2019. Overall, he went 47, 48, and 34 across all competitions. The high point is obvious. 2021, they were the first place team in the Western Conference. They finished on 61 points. They got a bye in the first round of the playoffs. They ended up losing in the second round in their only game, because you only played one that year, against the Portland Timbers. Right now, they are 3-13-10, 19 points, last in Major League Soccer. They lost their Rocky Mountain Cup rivalry match against RSL this weekend. Robin Fraser was runner-up for MLS Coach of the Year in 2021. So I think the question, first one coming out is, is this the solution? Was Robin Fraser the problem? Do you expect it to get better this year now? Do you expect it to get better over the next 18 months without him?
Short answer, no. I don't think Robin Fraser was the problem. I do think that he is still a MLS level head coach. The way they've built this team, 2021, they kind of got the fruits of what they were trying to build. It worked out. They were first in the West. Obviously, they get knocked out in the playoffs. They're never really able to recover from selling some of those players off. But Robin Fraser was kind of set up for failure here. I think with the team that he had, with the build that they had, it was never going to work. And I really feel bad for Robin Fraser because I do think he is a good, solid coach. And his two opportunities that he's had in this league, he's been set up for failure both times, Chivas USA first, and then with the Colorado Rapids. I think it's a bit unfair to him, but I think it was time to get out of that environment for him and also just for the club to kind of try to move forward. But if you're asking me if they're going to have success anytime soon, the answer is no, in my opinion. And they're getting rid of an asset, in my opinion, in Robin Fraser.
You mentioned 2021 it all working out. We had, I believe, Porig Smith, who's the chief soccer officer there, wrote the Rapids Way letter after they let Pablo Mastroeni go from a record-setting defensive team in 2017. They brought in Anthony Hudson. He lasted less than a year and a half. He got let go. Connor Casey took over as interim. Then Robin Fraser came in, put together another top team. It felt like this was a team that was going to try and bring in distressed assets from around MLS, ID players deeper in rosters of other MLS teams that they thought would have more
value. And push their own kids through
and be a selling club and use that money to sort of flip things. You look back at 2021, Diego Rubio, Austin Trusty, Keegan Rosenberry, Kellen Acosta, Lawless Abubakar. They are all on that list of finding them somewhere. And then you have a Cole Bassett and a Sam Vines who came up through their own team.
And a healthy Jack Price. To tie it all together. Yeah.
So does this idea not work? Did they execute it poorly? Or is there a third box?
I think it was executed poorly at this point because Trusty was a really high-level defender his last year and a half in Colorado, and it's tough to replace that, especially, weirdly, Lawless Abubakar has dropped off so much over the past 2 years. Like, he was, I don't want to say best 11, but like he was a top 10 MLS center back in 2021, easily top 10. And now he doesn't even look like a starter. And there are other guys I think you could say that about. And then Jack Price gets hurt and there's no really replace. Like, we've learned over the past 2 years, there's no real replacing Jack Price in this Rapid system, not just for his restarts, but for his ability to change where the game is played. They, you know, had a good early vein of production from their academy, but that has not been as rich since then. I mean, certainly they've never adequately replaced Sam Vines. Yeah. Diego Rubio had a couple of really good years, but I don't think anybody sees Diego Rubio as a full-time elite MLS. So it's like they got some of it, but they didn't get enough of it. And then once the part where they were like, okay, we can sell the guys we develop, once that hit, it becomes harder to replace.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, it's just harder to be a money ball team, quote unquote, in MLS now than it was even 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. There's so much more talent in the... I just wrote, you know, the column I wrote the other day, and the number of full internationals in MLS keeps growing, but it's not just, hey, this guy, you know, he plays for Liechtenstein. It's like, no, he plays for Switzerland, and this guy plays for Ukraine, and three guys play for Argentina. And it's like, if you're going to, like, that is, if you're going to thread that needle, you have got to make minimal mistakes. And the Rapids can't say that, either front office or I think Robin Fraser. I think he would probably say, like, yeah, there's some stuff I didn't do as good a job on. And the thing that he didn't do as good a job on, I think, over the last couple of years as he did the first 3 years, is developing players. Lawless Abubakar took a step backwards. Jonathan Lewis took a step backwards. Cole Bassett took a step backwards. Like, those guys were supposed to be your core. And then that's supposed to be your core.
Cole Bassett, a little less his fault because he was away. But
he was, but he has not been good this year. And then, like, you know, compounded by the front office is giving you DPs. Maxo, the center back, is, like, maybe not a starter caliber in this league. And Kevin Cabral he's probably going to go down as the worst DP signing of all time for two clubs.
So then how can that go really on Robin as much? obviously you want to develop guys, but if you don't have the guys around them and you're not making the correct signings around those guys.
I even look at like Lucas Esteves.
Yeah.
Where it's like, I can't even remember his name now. The Australian left back they brought in.
Markanich?
No.
That was Markanich is this year. Yeah.
He now scores for St. Louis.
Right.
Gravers back or whatever his name is. But it's like, he made Lucas Esteves a high level left back. So he's brought players in to this league that he's made productive if they're good enough. The question is if all of them are good enough. You mentioned Cabral, Vallecilla, Calvin Harris, Ralph Parisso. Those are the sort of cracks they've taken at trying to do the same thing they did with Austin Trusty. And it has not worked out with any of those players. Ralph Parisso, a little different because he was in the trade with Mark Anthony Kay, which I think they kind of were forced into doing. But it has been tough for the Rapids. I agree with you. I don't think it's fixed with Robin Fraser leaving. I do think sometimes fresh voices and just a fresh atmosphere helps. Chris Little will be the interim manager. He comes over. He was the Tacoma Defiance coach for Seattle. He was in Seattle's academy as they reset things, where you saw the Josh Atencios and Danny Leivas and those players sort of come through. I've spoken with Chris Little a couple of times. He's a very impressive guy. He very interesting to listen to talk about the sport. So I wouldn't be shocked if he had some success because you get a new coach bump and that's where the Rapids turn. Otherwise, I don't know if you are a former head coach that thinks you have options, that the Rapids make a ton of sense. So it'll be interesting to see where they land for their next job. Let's talk about Robin Fraser. What do we think is the future for him?
I hope he gets another crack at a head coaching job with a team that is better set, a franchise that's right. Better set up for success top to bottom. The one you pointed out was if Wilfred Nancy gets a call from a Ligue 1 team, Robin Fraser and Tim Bezbachenko go back a few years. Boy, that would be a snug fit because I think Robin Fraser wants to play the type of soccer that we see Columbus playing. In the meantime, I wouldn't be shocked if this time tomorrow he's added to Greg Vanney's staff in LA as an assistant. That one makes
sense. They've been coaching together since they played for the LA Galaxy when they were coaching, I think, U9 in the LA area. Seriously. They then went to Arizona together.
They went to the French coaching academy together at one point.
And that's ran Casa Grande before it was part of RSL. They then moved to Toronto together as well.
Yep.
So yeah, they are very close. They've had a ton of history. They've had a ton of success. If it is an assistant job, I think he's going to be high on any list for any team. I thought of Seattle as one where if we think
you put Seattle in there. I thought Anders put Seattle in there.
That would make sense.
When we talked about Portland, we talked about Freddy Juarez because his connection with Ned Grabovoy from RSL. And if he leaves and there's an assistant role open, it feels like Brian Schmetzer is the type of coach who lets his assistants coach a lot. And Robin Fraser has a ton of experience and is a good coach.
Yeah.
And I think for Robin Fraser, you look at it and say, Gonzalo Pineda got a job. If Freddie gets a job, there is a pathway there of like, this team's successful.
Ooh, Atlanta might be interesting. Well, I don't want to speculate about
it. Darryl's about to open up a bunch of job openings.
What about Portland?
He should 100% get an interview.
Yeah.
I don't know. It feels like this was Ned Grabovoy putting his foot down saying it's my project.
Right.
He might fit that. Yeah. Every single opening he should be in the conversation for.
He should get an interview for any job that comes open.
If he wants them. If he chooses to leave. He does have connections to Colorado. That was a large part of the reason he went there. Let's move into some young players. Let's talk 22 under 22. Disclaimer. You have to be 21 years old on the last day of the MLS regular season to be considered for the
22 under 22.
So if you are 22.
My 22 under 22 shirt is raising a lot of questions that are answered by the shirt.
There you go. So for everyone who says a name and then goes, are they eligible? Know that they have to be 21 or younger on the final day
also
of
known
the
as
regular
season. Under 22.
Also known as that. So we're obviously all going to vote on our lists. A number of people around MLS are going to vote. The final full list will come out, I believe, in early October. We will cover that extensively here at Major League Soccer at Extra Time and on MLSsoccer.com. We will probably dig in a little bit more on youth development around then. Let's just talk about the list right now, though. We want to all pick. I'm going to give us 4 to 5 names each, or as a collective, which would end up as 15 names that could be number one on this list. I think we did this preseason. Mm-hmm. You then said you wrote it in your column midway through the season coming back and did it again. So Doyle's will now have 4 cracks at getting the number one name right, which I appreciate, which I assume means you have a pretty comfortable list right now.
Yeah.
So let's do in a circle. Okay. Ones each.
All right. I'll just gonna give my top 4. John Duran, Mamadou Fall, Gabby Pereira, and Paxton Aaronson.
That is an example of names that could have been available if they were not transferred out of Major League Soccer. They would have
this
been eligible
year.
For this list.
Calendar
Duran
year.
Starts in the
for
Premier
Aston
League.
Villa, yeah.
Mamadou Fall just got sent to Barcelona. I don't know if you've heard of them.
It was 8 million, was it?
I don't. It's a loan with an option to buy.
Yeah, but from what I think Tom
up
wrote
to
about
north
it.
As far as 7, I think was
okay.
The number.
Tom said, but it was like the loan is structured in a way where like it they're going to hit the number.
Boom.
Yeah.
Paxton Aaronson, who started or didn't start, played in MLS Cup last year for Philly, then went to Eintracht Frankfurt for I don't think it was 7 million, but for a number closer.
It was like 5 plus sell on.
And has played actually a decent amount in the Bundesliga. And then Gabby Pereira, who got sold to the Middle East more recently from NYCFC, who was this show was a big fan of. Those are an example of some of the names that could have been on here. There are also a number of names of players who were sold before the age of 22 out of MLS, whether they were MLS Next Academy players or signings that obviously
would
still be on
this list. I mean,
Ricardo
Pepi would be on this list if he was still here.
And that's what Maria wanted to say. El Santi Jimenez in my ear. So that, I think, is part of what needs to be recognized, which is there is less knowns on this list because players from MLS get sold before their full commodities because leagues are scouting this league, understand the potential and understand the quality. I think it makes the list a bit more debatable.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to go first with your
I'll
number
go
one
first.
Pick? Actually,
I'll go. My number one pick actually was Chris Brady.
Yeah.
I think
the Gaga Slonina.
Yeah.
Profile.
I mean, he has been better than Gaga Slonina was across the board, and Gaga Slonina went for 8 figures to a Premier League club. And granted, it's a draft and stash type of situation where they're loaning him out probably for the next 4 years or so, and in the hopes that
for the next decade,
the right? Lone Army, the Chelsea,
the Lone Army, it still exists. Chris Brady has been better than him. He's the same age as him. I think Chicago have another 8-figure goalkeeper coming from their academy, and he'll probably be sold in January. And I just think in terms of week to week consistency from this group of players, he provided that at an incredibly young age for the position. He has all the physical tools, and he also has super high ceiling.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. I also remind you all that I think it was Club Bruges put an offer almost to $2 million out there before Chris Brady had ever played in MLS. Yeah. Chicago said no because they knew what he was worth. And you talk about that Gaga number, like if he has more counting stats of already played for Chicago, they're going to say, we already know how good he is because we have the comparison. And we had the comparison in-house. We want more. So I think Chris Brady's a good shout. And also, there is not an Alphonso Davies right now or a Tyler Adams. And so it feels like this is one where a goalkeeper could end up number one, and especially if you're a keeper that plays at that age. You want to? I'll give you the second pick.
Okay.
Doing a snake draft. No, I'm just kidding.
We're doing a snake draft over here. A lot of names on here. I'm going to go just because I've been impressed with him since the first week of the season. I'm going to go Noah Buck. I think just the fact that he's been able to not just start at such a young age for the Revs, but plays such an integral role in their midfield when he's been healthy, when he's able to play, and where you imagine he's going to get so much more run. He's so young. For him to have the impact that he's having now, it's only going to continue to grow. I don't even, you know, he's probably not going to make it with the Revs when he's 22. You know what I mean? He's probably be gone before that. I love what I'm seeing from him just from a standpoint of being able to really impact the game from a midfield position and just how calm he is on the ball. It's really something that's you don't really
that's
see.
That's what stands out to me about Noel Buck is like he receives the ball really well in traffic. He's brave about it, soft feet, and then combines.
Yeah.
I think he's shown different elements of his game at the pro level, which is wild sometimes for young player where it's like you can do your one thing. Noel Buck is currently in Spain with England's U19 national team. They will face off against Germany and Spain. For people who don't pay attention, in most of Europe, the U19 team is their U20 team. Right. And that's where they do European U19 championships. That's the same team you send as well to a U20 World Cup. There's not a throwaway of like, oh, we have this random roster, let's call some random names in. Like Noel Buck's in a conversation that very few young MLS Academy players are in. So I think that's a really good shout as well. I'm going to go with one.
Let me just, Maria's going to kill me because we're already long here.
Oh, no, we're but talking 22 under 22s.
Are you worried about losing Noel Buck to England?
I think in the long run, I'm going to say no. Yeah. I do think in the long run, he's going to get his opportunity with the U.S. national team. I just think it came down to numbers for this specific camp. I'm not. I mean, there is the threat, but I don't think so. I think that the U.S.
He would have to be the best midfielder we've ever produced in order to factor for England, I think. And like the best midfielders we've produced, well, we recruited Thomas Dooley, who was almost a factor for Germany 30 years ago, but ended up playing for us.
And Yunus Musa.
And Yunus Musa, right?
Yep.
Claudio Reyna is still, I think, the best all-around midfielder I've ever seen the U.S. produce, the Weston McKennie and peak Michael Bradley. None of those guys, other than maybe Reyna at his absolute best, I don't think any of
John O'Brien for the 6.5 weeks he was healthy.
I always felt he was a better left back, though.
Hell yeah.
So did Ajax.
Let's spend 10 minutes on this.
So did Ajax in Barcelona, to be fair.
Let's spend 10 minutes on this right now. So I think you guys said the two main names that are going to be in there to win it this year. So I'm going to go where I think this person will solidly be in this conversation. I'm going to go with John Tolkien, where I think that John Tolkien in 5 years will be starting for the what we consider the best team of anyone on this list.
If you told me he was starting for RB Leipzig 5 years from now or Mönchengladbach, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
I guess I would be a little bit surprised if he's on like a top three club in Germany 5 years from now.
I don't think I'd be super surprised. I spent a little bit of time with John Tolkien, just how much he enjoys just working and being there. I know that, okay, you could say that doesn't mean he's going to be a great player, but he's already a really solid MLS left back that can stay here and play forever and be a star in this league. I do think that he can be at that level. With the Red Bull connection, I could absolutely see him at RB Leipzig. Not to say he'll be an out-and-out starter every single day in 4 or 5 years at that club. But he just loves the game. He loves to work. He really prides himself.
Blind confidence.
Blind confidence, which you absolutely need.
He'll take anyone on in the world. I think there's a decent chance he's better outside of the Red Bull system. Because he's been on the ball.
I agree with that. 100%.
So now
and like the Red Bull system, just dial it back to what Philly play because John Tolkien could be Kai Havertz.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I think he has a potential to play in a non-Red Bull system team where they ID him.
To play actual soccer.
Where they're like, we could sort of connect through this player. Yeah. You're not going to attack him full time.
What's connect?
Yeah, exactly. Passes complete.
Yeah.
I don't even get me started. And then he's already in that family where it's like, I also won't be shocked when Salzburg and Leipzig are like, okay, it's time for him to come over now and play for us.
Right.
So I think the potential there is very high. Is he going to be the starter for the U.S. men's national team after all that? I don't know. Like, I think that also could exist of like, if he doesn't fit in this team, other guys could make more sense and might be at a higher level.
There's a world where he goes to a team that is more possession heavy, that worries about connecting, and ends up in a platoon with Anthony Robinson, where when we need more width and penetration from our left back, then it's Jedi. And when we need more of the ball, then it's Tolkien. Like that is a,
and that's a fair, I mean, that's success. I mean, for him and talking for the Red Bulls developing a player like that again, I mean, I think it's a resounding success for him.
I would not have him number one, though. I had John Tolkien outside of my top five just because I'm not sure I see the ceiling with these other guys. And it's back to me, so I'll make the pick. I'm not sure I see the ceiling with Alan Velasco.
Okay.
We certainly haven't seen it week to week, but he's just 21. He has developed in MLS to the point where he's been called in for Argentina's national team. And look, he was on the field last month against Leo Messi, playing as a true number 10 in the League's Cup. And you could argue that Alan Velasco was the best player on the field in that game. Yeah. He was amazing. And that, like, okay, I still don't think he's Almada, right? Because he doesn't have that burst with the ball that Almada has. And I think he kind of has to be a 10. And there aren't a lot of leagues outside of MLS where... outside of the Americas, I guess, where the number 10 still rules. You still see it in Belgium somewhat, but you don't see it in the Netherlands. You see it somewhat in Portugal, but not a lot.
Turkey
for sure. But also, if you told me, you know, 5 years from now, not even 3 years from now, Velasco was doing for Dallas what Pabelo Reynoso has been doing for Minnesota this year. And by the way, Reynoso's playing at an MVP clip for Reynoso this year. That's a pretty high ceiling, man.
Mm-hmm.
That is really, really good.
Yeah.
I think in order to hit that in Europe, he has to be better as a winger. And so far he's been kind of underwhelming as a winger in MLS.
It's always decent when your soccer idea aligns with the World Cup winning coach. Yes. We just called him into Argentina.
Yes. Yeah.
Full
what are the odds that what are the odds that Scaloni was watching that game to watch he Messi to, yeah. and said, oh, wait, he's our guy.
Scaloni pulls up FOTMOB. He's like, which of these guys are ours? All right, so that's you.
I'm going to go with a guy who I've been watching in the Argentinian league before he arrived here, and that's Tomas Aviles. I said it when he got here to some of the guys who were asking just because I was watching. I've watched him with Racing. He has played above his age for years now. He was a dominant center back with Racing, and arguably Racing has probably been the best Argentine club the last 3-4 years, and he was an out and out starter for them. I think you're starting to see him, you know, get into this team and really understand where he needs to play. But you saw him now just defensively. He is not easy to get around. He's big, he's good in the air. I think that he has the ability to eventually become one of the best center backs in MLS.
So the point that David made when we were talking about this in pre-show, part of the calculus we're all using here is like, how much could this guy be sold for? Well, Aviles has already, look, he's the record signing in terms of expenditure on an MLS center back. I think it was $7 or $8 million that Miami paid. He's already commanded, I think, $10 million worth of transfer fees in his career, and he's 19.
Right.
It's probably more than a lot of these players on this list will in their entire careers.
Yep.
Already.
And the other thing is, for most of the guys who were signed in the summer window, NYCFC's got a few of them, RSL have a couple as well. I've seen enough of Aviles. He's good.
He's really good.
He's good.
Yeah, we have a long under 22 initiative list of players where Julian Fernandez, we haven't seen enough. NYCFC, right? That's not saying these players don't have the potential. You're trying to put a lot together when you put together a list like this. But I do think what you said, which for me always stands out, of like one of the things in potential is potential sell-on fees, potential future career. Some of these players coming to MLS, like a Velasco, have already hit that number. I'm going to go with Brian Gutierrez on my next pick. I do think he's someone that could get first place votes. I do think there's a big support for him in a lot of the people that watch MLS. Perception-wise, he probably took a ding not going to the U20 World Cup. I'm still fine with it.
Mm-hmm.
He plays for a Chicago team that sold John Duran, Gaga Slonina, and are, you know, have Chris Brady as well. I think that's all fine. He's played multiple positions this year, multiple different roles for a struggling team. And I think he's shined at all of them. He can break guys down 1v1. He can be dangerous over the top. He can control the game from central areas. I don't know which of those things is right. going to be the thing he leans into most of like where he plays. But as Doyle said, there aren't tens outside of MLS. You put him in a 4-2-3-1 and just let him float across the three and interchange and connect and play. I think he's special. Every single level I see him at, he scales up and continues to succeed. And I do think there's a ton of support around the US soccer circles, Canadian soccer circles, of like, this guy's one of our own and is special. So he's going to be my next vote. We probably don't have time to do 15. Well, I guess we're on our third vote already. So let's be quick on this one.
I just wanted to say, what position does Brian Gutierrez right. play?
Well, that's what we just talked about.
I know, but like, I was listening yeah. to
and
you.
I don't have an answer.
Yeah.
Does it affect him that he's playing in so many different, positions?
I don't see him as a true 10.
But again, right? if no one plays as a 10, that's not an issue, right? If you are a quote unquote 10 and it's like, you've already played deeper in midfield, so there's trust that you can cover your position defensively. There's trust that you can connect. There's trust you can receive the ball in tight spaces. And I do think you're looking at most teams where it's like that player floats out and becomes a winger or a wide attacker half the time, and all the wide attackers come inside and have to be goal scorers. I think he does all those things. So I'm not worried about it because I think most teams now, you just bring an attacker.
I love Brian Gutierrez. He has 3 goals in 4,500. MLS minutes.
Chicago Fire.
Yeah, I mean, he also misses a ton of chances. Yeah. I love him. I don't think it's a wrong pick. I wish I was a little bit more bullish on him. I was super bullish on Dylan Barrero entering the season.
Yeah, I think that's a good one.
I would have had him in my top 3. Yeah. I know he got hurt. Nobody's seen him play in months. Not a guarantee he's going to come back and be exactly what he was before doing his ACL, but what he was before doing his ACL. Like, he looked like he was going to have a best 11 caliber season, playing as a second forward in that diamond. And his mobility and ability to like run, you know, off the shoulder of the target forward or flare out wide and suddenly become kind of a winger and attack the back post from those areas. And obviously he has 1v1 stuff and he provides the final ball. He was fantastic to start the year. Can't wait till he's healthy again. Yeah. The Revs will have another 8-figure sale on their hands, it looks like.
Love Barrero. He took my guy. I was at the game where he got injured. He was playing wide in that game, and he was incredible.
Yeah.
So feel so bad for him that he got injured, because somebody that is just better for the league when he's when he's been around. So, you know, hopefully he gets better, but definitely a good shout for 22 under 22. I'm going to go... Ah, man, it's a tough one. I'll go Jack McGlynn because of what we've seen. It's a little bit of a body of work now with him, right? We've seen him have success in that Philadelphia Union team. I just like watching him play. I think he's a fun player to watch. I think it's been great to see him in that Philadelphia team. My only concern: do we know where he's going to play moving forward? Do we know what his best position is when he does eventually move on? I'm not really sure about that. The talent is clearly there, though.
He's like, to me, like Tolkien, which is he might be better outside of that system. Yep. But if you're going to get a player like that, you want to be able to say you have learned how to run a ton, press, whatever, like add that to your game. I think he'll be better off for that.
He still has such bad moments defensively.
Yeah, 100%. But he also has elite moments on the ball.
He is like on the ball. He's just beautiful. Yeah. I almost want to see him just go to a place where they'll play him. Like, Colorado, offer everything you have to Philadelphia. Get Jack McGlynn, play him as a full, like a true 10.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like give him 150 touches a game if you can.
Philly won't do it.
No.
It's going to be with the team that takes him overseas, which makes will sense. Be a lot of responsibility for a young American player to pick up. But could be really cool. I think him picking where to go and Philly helping him with that is massive.
Yeah.
But it worked for Brendan Aaronson at Salzburg. So he made the right move there. We'll see if they can do it again. I'm stuck between two now. I had Talis Magno on my list. One, because he's already been sold for $10 million, which is more than most of these players, again, ever will. Two, because we've seen him score in big games, in big moments. I think he's shown elite talent. It's been tougher over the last year. I don't think that's totally his responsibility, but I'm going to go with Benjamin Kramaski. One, because I think he's got a ton of support right now. And two, because I think he's special. And I've seen him play now for 3 years, 4 years. from academy levels all the way through to MLS, and he's performed at each level very quickly. And he's been a game breaker for his team, and he's been a winner at every level.
I just feel like he adapts so well to his situations. Even when he was a youth player to now, you see him just be able to, okay, he has a bad moment or a bad game. He's able to adapt in that next game. He'll be, you know, he'll show you what he knows exactly what he'll need to do. Obviously, a little bit of that has to do with having Messi on your team right now.
Well, like
that
steps helps, up, but steps up been, and takes the fifth penalty.
They put him right. He has that.
How many kids are you going to trust to do that?
It's a measure of his soccer IQ that he is able to let the best players on his team make him better. Right. There are some players who do not figure out how to move and how to be a guy who can take advantage of that. And he has. And I didn't necessarily see that from him 6 weeks ago. I would not have predicted this, but he's been really good. I still would have taken Buck to the national team camp over Kramaski if I was Greg Berhalter. But, you know, I'm not. Either way, it's fun that we have 18-year-olds in this conversation.
Oh, yeah.
That could be a segue to Obed Vargas. I'm not going to go there. He still does not look to me like the guy that he was 2 years ago, before the injury, that the back injury that kept him out for most of 2022. I'm hoping he will get there. Instead, I am going with a different central midfielder.
We don't have any. You're not voting anymore.
Oh,
we're done. We each did three.
Oh, that's I have 15. To say Nathan Saliba. I have to say his name.
I'll applaud that. I'll applaud that.
He's been awesome since since he's playing as an 8 for Montreal, right? Because they tried to play him as a 10 earlier this year. He doesn't have that kind of vision. He has been really, really good as a number 8 for this Montreal side.
There are a lot of actually plays a ton of minutes center mids in this conversation. We didn't mention Owen Wolf, who's been a full-time starter for 2 years. Daniel Edelman, who's been a full-time starter. We didn't mention Caleb Wiley. Aiden Morris,
who has already been like the second best player in an MLS Cup.
Right.
Yeah.
We didn't mention David Ruiz, who has worked his way into a starting lineup as well. Diego Luna, who has pushed for a starting team. And then, as I said, a number of the under 22 initiatives, Stipe Buick, Andres Gomez, a ton of those. We spent a lot of time on this because this is like the most fun thing we do. And I love that. That has taken out some time from USMNT preview. Doyle put a pox on the house of Johnny Cardoso. He said Tanner Tessman should come in his place. And then he got hurt the next day. And then Tanner Tessman got called up. So we're going to try and avoid having Doyle say any specific names in this segment. Does anyone have anything they really want to see for? Is it Uzbekistan?
I just want to see the U.S. move the ball quickly, create a lot of chances, hopefully score some goals. You know, Flo Balogun was so much fun during the Nations League and put a couple away. Ricardo Pepi is not playing now for PSV, so hopefully he gets on the field and puts a couple away as well. I just want it to be fun.
Yeah, I just want it to be. I also just want to see, these are the type of games you want to see the younger players come in. So I hope that obviously we see a little bit of the guys playing in Europe, but I would want to see, you know, I want to see Kramaski on the field. I want to see some
Kevin Paredes.
Guys. Yes, Kevin Paredes.
Kevin Paredes is listed as a left back instead of as a midfielder. I'm excited about that long term.
Yeah, is that's where he's playing with Wolfsburg, though.
So
right?
He's mostly played on the wing his time in Germany as a sub. But hopefully, this is an indication that Wolfsburg, who are not a great developmental club, it needs to be said, have had a come to Jesus moment and realized that long term he protects much better as a wing back or a fullback.
Kevin Paredes on a 22 under 22 list, or did he leave too quickly? No, he was on a list, I think.
He was on a list, but he's another one who's young enough. If he was here, he would be. Oh, yeah.
That sounds like a good show. Let's go back through 22 under 22 list and see what we got right and what we got wrong. We don't have to do it today, but we'll do it coming up. Let's finish off with a little weekend preview action, and we're going to do it by talking about our squad pick, MLS squad pick. You can join our league. Go to MLSsquadpick.com to play, or you can click on the link we will tweet out. Join the official Extra Time League. Use code EXTRA. That's E-X-T-R-A, all caps. You pick 5 players for your squad. If they all score on the same match day, you win. We did not win last week. You can win a free jersey. You can win a $160 gift card to MLS Store if all your players score. Each round you play also gives you one entry for the $10,000 grand prize at the end of the season. As I said, we did not win last weekend because we don't even remember who else we picked besides Messi, who didn't score.
And Bouanga.
And Bouanga, who didn't score. So take our advice with a grain of salt. I'll start with my first pick. I'm going to say Alan Pulido. We have seen Miami give up chances, especially centrally. Christophe will not be available. He will with Ukraine. I just hit my own cough button because I'm so excited about that. Trey Callender, we believe, will not be a part of this game as well because he will be with the U.S. men's national team. David Ruiz is out. And then you add in Messi and Diego
Gomez.
They
still have that spine, though, right? They'll have Aviles and Kamal Miller. They'll have Busquets.
Do you think they only
and
play
Dixon
two
Arroyo. Yeah, I think they probably only play two in this one.
So
unless Ryan Saylor returns from the dead.
Yeah.
Well, actually,
or Victor Ulloa plays back there.
Victor, or like what we've seen at times is they've slid DeAndre Yedlin in as a right center back who, you know, breaks lines off the ball, which is interesting. So it could be, well, it speaks to what a mess it is and why Alan Pulido's a good bet to score, huh?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Right. So I'm going to pick Pulido. And obviously for SKC, we talked about it, must wins across the board for them. They have played more games than a lot of teams, so they need to stack points while teams are off on international break and then have to come back and play them. Who was going next?
I'll say Benteke.
Because we're all the same.
He's always been streaky. He got on a good one the other day. San Jose are not a convincing team right now.
It looked like Tanner Beeson replaced Mensah this weekend because Mensah has struggled.
Yeah.
I like Tanner Beeson at times. Christian Benteke is not a great matchup with Tanner Beeson. He struggled with Pukki, which is a different challenge. But it feels like this is the second week where it's like Benteke is going to feast.
And no Carlos Garreta, which is key.
No Trauco.
No Trauco as well. That's going to be huge.
So talk about getting crosses in from those wide areas as well. And no Cade Cowell, which will not hurt them defensively. May not even hurt them offensively. We will see.
Did not make my 22 under 22.
Wow.
Yeah.
You don't like deflected goals from the top of the 18?
Might end up being stupid because Cade Cowell, we all see he has talent. He's not an effective soccer player yet. Maybe he ends up somewhere soon where he will become an effective soccer player.
We'll go with the next one. You know, this is a tough one just because I feel like if you're going to pick a Minnesota guy, you should probably pick Reynoso.
Yeah.
But because he, you know, he's been on fire and we like to mix it up a little bit, let's go Mender Garcia.
Love it.
He will be, you know, Pukki's not going to be there. We don't know Bongi Hwangwane's status. We don't know if he'll be available. So let's go with Mender. Good player. I saw him score a couple goals earlier in the season. I called one of their games where he scores an equalizer late. They're hosting a Revs team that's been giving up some goals. So I'm going to go with Mender Garcia. I hope that's not the one that, that gives us the L for this one, but, I'm going to go with him.
It'll be interesting to see the group that New England brings to that game as well. Let's finish up with two players from LA. I'll just say them. We're saying Carlos Vela because Portland give up chances. It's just the reality of their team. And if Buonga is not going to put them away, you have to pick someone else on LAFC. So we picked Carlos Vela. Hopefully Buonga passes to him this time because I did not want to be in that locker room to see that go down after that. And then the other one was Tyler Boyd. The LA Galaxy play against St. Louis coming up on Sunday. We talked about some of the struggles for St. Louis, maybe trying to get some rest for some guys. The Galaxy have lost, what'd we say? It was one of their last 14
11.
MLS?
One of their last
11 in all MLS competitions. Boyd has been key. Douglas Costa should be out again, so Boyd should get the start. He's their leading goal scorer over the course of this year. And with that, we come to our completion of the show. It. Maria would like us to do 15 more minutes. But I'm going to say it's okay for us to end now. If you made it to this point, we love you. Hard hands all day. Andrew Wiebe will be back at some point, I don't know, in November or December. And until then, take a look out for under 22 under 22 voting. My ballot's not in until I believe the morning. So if you want to spam me, you can do it at Twitter, on X, or whatever you want to call it. And that's it. Thank you, too, for being here. Thank you to all of you for listening. Thank you to Maria and everyone else for working. Have a good one, and we'll talk to you again next time.